Good morning, today's daf in Shabbos Kuf Chav Tes. We are concluding this morning the 18th parak of Masechet Shabbos. Our Mishnah yesterday brought us to the discussion of giving birth, delivering babies of animals, delivering babies of humans on Shabbos. By humans, obviously, there's an element of Sekanas Nefashos. The mother's life is in jeopardy as she's having the baby. Consequently, there will be a wide allowance to be Mechal al Shabbos. We're going to be discussing that at the beginning of today's shiur today. We will continue going over the halachas of a woman giving birth in terms of mostly Shabbos, a couple of other areas as well. And then a good part of today is going to be Hakazas Dam, is going to be bloodletting. Bloodletting, which was a common procedure that was done back in the day. The Gemara will be spending a good amount of today's daf, a strong percentage of today's daf, on the topic of bloodletting. And Amir Tzah Hashem, this morning we're going to be concluding the 18th parak, bringing us tomorrow morning to the 19th parak of Shabbos, perhaps one of the most popular parakim of Shabbos, Rebbe Lazar de Mila. We're going to be discussing of the mitzvah of Mila, specifically on Shabbos, but in general also just the mitzvah of Mila in general as well. And that is beginning tomorrow, Amir Tzah Hashem. Let us pick up where we left off yesterday. And we are towards the bottom of Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis. We are at the two dots, five lines from the bottom. And Ha'isa Tzricha L'Shemen. So if she is in need of oil. So we'll recall yesterday that the Mishnah taught us that when it comes to the delivering of a baby of a human, so you do whatever is necessary, says the Mishnah. And whatever is necessary for the woman, if you look back at the Mishnah, so Miyaldin Se'isha B'Shabbos V'Korin L'Chachama Mimakom L'Makom. So you deliver the baby of a woman, you call the midwife from wherever she may be, in other words, even though she has to go beyond Chum, Mechan Alav Etz HaShabbos, you violate the Shabbos, V'koshen Etz HaTibur, you cut the umbilical cord, you knot the umbilical cord, Rabbi Yossi Omer Av Chotchem, Rabbi Yossi says you cut it, V'chol Tzarchei Mila Osim B'Shabbos, and then the Mila is done on Shabbos as well, which again is coming up in tomorrow's daf. What we discussed yesterday is the following. When we say that you can be Mechal Shabbos for her, what does that include? So incorporates even some alleviation of her stress. Let's say, for example, this was the Gemara's example yesterday. Let's say that she was blind, and as far as she's concerned, she cannot see. The midwife feels that she's been doing this for years, and she can deliver a baby in the dark. She doesn't need any light. And the woman, who is blind, who is having the baby, so she says, I want more light in the room. I want the midwife to be able to see. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, by lighting a light in that room, you're going to be alleviating the stress of the woman delivering the baby. And as a result of that, that also falls under the category of Sekanas Nefesh. You're giving her more ease and comfort in doing so. And so you light the fire on Shabbos even under those circumstances. That's what we saw yesterday. Now we're talking about bringing her some oil. Okay, so she's going to need some oil, exactly what the oil is necessary for. So you speak to the midwives about it. But anyway, they needed oil. And so you needed to transport the oil. So what we learned yesterday in the Braisa is that the transportation of the oil should be done kala'achar yad, should be done in an unusual manner. Meaning that you do have an allowance to be mechal Shabbos, but at the same time, however, minimize the amount of chil Shabbos that one does. One should not be flaunting chil Shabbos. It's a balance. One should be mechal Shabbos, but on the other hand, try to minimize the amount of chil Shabbos that's done. And if you can do the activity in the same qualitative manner, and all you're doing now is just simply minimizing the Chil Shabbos, so that should be a consideration. So the Gemara says that in the transportation of the oil, so if you can do it, put it in the back of your hand, put it in your hair, meaning so that there's you're doing so in an unusual manner, and you're not violating Shabbos on a Daraisa level, if that's possible. If it's not possible, then obviously you do it in the normal manner. The Gemara, as one of the examples of doing an unusual manner, was to take the oil and transport it in her hair. If she needs more oil, so have the woman transporting the oil, bring it in her hair. And the Gemara now asks a simple question, and now we're picking it up where we left off yesterday. So the Gemara says that we know that one of the malachas on Shabbos is schita. So on one hand you gained, on the other hand you lost. What did you gain? So by carrying the oil in the hair, so that's an unusual manner of carrying. And so on the malacha votzah, so now you dropped it down from a daraisa to darabanan. On the other hand, in order to extract the oil from the hair, so that's going to require squeezing of the hair. So now you walked into another malacha. So you gained in terms of losing the malacha votzah, but you lost now because now you are violating the malacha of schita. And the Gemara says, so I understand what you're trying to accomplish, but it's now counterproductive because you're still violating another malacha. The Gemara is going to give two answers to this question. Rabbi Rav Yosef Dami Tavayu and Shchita Beseya. So the first answer of the Gemara is a fundamental answer, and that is that according to the Shitas of Rabbi and Rav Yosef, so Shchita is not in the hair, meaning that when one squeezes out any liquid that's absorbed in the hair, that is not a violation of Shchita. Rashi writes over here, it's a short Rashi. Rashi writes, it's the last line, Shchita Beseya, Shu Kasha Ve'in Boleya. So Rashi says it's the nature of the hair. The hair is thick, and the hair is hard, and the hair does not absorb. And so as a result of that, they're of the position that the only time that there's an issue of schita is when it's an absorbed into something which is absorbent, spongy. But the hair does not have that quality, and therefore, according to these Amoraim, there is no schita with the hair, and so that one is not violating an issur d'oraisa by squeezing the oil out of the hair. Answer number one. Answer number two, Rav Ashi Amar Afilu Tema Yesh Schita B'Seya. And Rav Ashi says, no, we don't have to accept that principle. And we could say that squeezing water out of the hair, squeezing oil out of the hair, is a violation of Shchita. And if that's the case, then how do we understand the Braisa? So, Mivi Allah Bekli Derech Sa'ara. That the oil is not going into her hair, but rather the Kli is going to be held in her hair, meaning that she'll balance the Kli on her head. She'll carry in that manner. Again, assuming that that's not normal, because if that is a normal way of transport, so then that would be a violation of Otsa. But the Kli is in her hair, doesn't mean that the oil is in her hair. That's a way we could understand the Braisa. And the Kamadev, Lishanuni Mishaninan. Because any kind of deviation that could be done, and again, I'm going to add, because it's important, any deviation that can be done and is not going to diminish the care that's going to be given to the woman who's delivering, or for that matter, anyone who has a Sakana. So if you could do a Shinui, so then do a Shinui. That is preferable. Okay, so we have two approaches to the question of why isn't it Shchita when one puts it in the hair? And really what you end up in the Gemara is a fundamental debate in terms of whether or not squeezing one hair on Shabbos or on Yom Tov is a violation of Shchita. On Shabbos it doesn't really come up much in Halacha, but on Yom Tov, however, where there are allowances to shower on Yom Tov, so then obviously this becomes an issue, it becomes a major issue. And even on Shabbos, get caught in the rain, it becomes an issue. Woman having to go to the mikvah on Friday night becomes an issue. Anyway, certainly there are considerations over here, and it does become a halach lamaisa discussion. Again, speak to your local rav, but it all comes from this gemara right over here. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmul, continuing in the gemara. Chaya kozman shakever pasuach bein amrat srichani bein lo amrat srichani mechan alav es haShabbos. When the woman who is giving birth is in a state of psichas hakever. Psichas hakever means to say that her uterus now is opening, and the baby's coming out. So at that point in time, she's in a state of sakanas nefesh. And regardless of what she says, so she says she needs it, she says she doesn't need it. So one violates the Shabbos on her behalf. Nistam hakever. However, once the uterus starts closing, meaning postpartum, bein amrat srichani, bein lo amrat srichani, ein mechalan alas haShabbos. So according to this first version, so you are not being mechal Shabbos because she is not in a state of sakanas nefesh. So, Rav Ashi masni hachi, as we are now on the top of Kuchav Testament Aleph, so Rav Ashi gives a different version, and that is, Rav Ashi masni hachi, Marzucha masni hachi, sorry, Rav Ashi gave the version that we just went through. Marzucha is going to give the version that we are now going to go through. And that is, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Shmuel, Chaya Kozman, Shakev Pasuch, Bein Amra Tzrichani, Bein Amra Ein Tzrichani, Mechan Aleh Asa Shabbos. So while the Kever is Pasuch, yes, by the way, it is an unusual way to describe the uterus as being described as a Kever, okay? But nevertheless, that's for the Machshava portion of today's daf, which is not coming up later. But anyway, but he starts off the same way, as we said previously, that during Psichas HaKever, while the uterus is open, so then she's in a state of Sakaras Nefesh, and you are Mechal Shabbos, regardless, irrespective of what she says. However, Nistam HaKever, but once the uterus closes, Amrat Srichani, Mechal Levas HaShabbos, Lo Amrat Srichani, E Mechal Levas HaShabbos, so then afterwards, if she says that she's in danger, you're Mechal Shabbos. If she says she's not in danger, you're not Mechal Shabbos. So, at the time of Psichas HaKever, perfect agreement, that she's in a state of sakanas nefesh after psichas hakever. So then we have two positions. One is a more stringent position. Now, when I say stringent, you understand that stringency only comes vis-a-vis Shabbos. In other words, the second position is stringent vis-a-vis her life. So it's not really fair to say that one is more stringent than the other. It's just a question of where we're going to put the emphasis on. So it's funny, the Gemara does use the words kula and chumra. So Ravina says to Maremar, you know, Marzutra was Mekel, Rav Ashi was Machmir. Hilchus HaKaman, who's the halacha fa'al like? Amarle, halacha kamarzutra. The halacha fa'al is like Marzutra, because Safik Nefashos HaHakel, because at this point in time, look, during the Psichas HaKever, we're all in agreement, your Mechal HaShabbos for her, regardless of what she says. After Psichas HaKever, so we're going to be Machmir on Safik Nefashos, or Mekel as a result of Sakanos Nefashos. Okay? In other words, the life is put in paramount position, and if her life is not in only in danger, but even in possibility of being danger, so you're Mechal Shabbos. And even though it's postpartum, and even though it was after the kever is closed, nevertheless, if she says that she's in danger, so you listen to her, and you're Mechal Shabbos on her behalf, the Gemara says, that's the halacha, suffik nefashos lahakel, any time that a person's life is in danger, so we're going to be Mekel vis-a-vis Shabbos, the Gemara is very clear about this conclusion. Now the Gemara over here gets into a technical discussion. So at what point in time is it considered that the kever has been opened up? And at what point in time has the kever been considered closed? So Amar Abai, so the Gemara now is going to give three markers, three symptoms in terms of diagnosing when the kever is opened up. So one opinion in the Gemara is that from the time that she sits on the birthing stool, Rav Huna Bered, Rav Yishua Amar, Mishasha Adam Shosis V'yareid, from the time that the blood starts flowing out of her, and Va'amila Mishasha Chavrsa Nos Os Osab Agapeha, from the time that she needs assistance in walking. So the Gemara is describing these three, maybe not one to the exclusion of the other. Maybe each one of them themselves could represent some form of way of determining that the Psichas HaKever has occurred, and that is the beginning of Psichas HaKever, where there your Mechal Shabbos on her behalf. An Masai Psichas HaKever. Now, until what point in time does it close? So the Gemara gives a possibility of three different windows. According to Abai, it's 3 days. According to Rava, there are two versions of Rava saying in the name of Rav Yehuda. One is that 7 days, and the other one is 30 days postpartum. Amri Nahardai. In the yeshiva of Narda, this is what they said regarding postpartum. Chaya Gimel, Zayin Velamed. So we're going to be looking at 3 days postpartum. 3 days postpartum, 7 days postpartum, 30 days postpartum. And Rashi points out over here is that the seven does not start after the three, meaning it's from postpartum to three, from postpartum to seven, and from postpartum to 30. Now, what do these signify? So, Bein Amar Tzrichani, Bein Amar Alo Tzrichani, Mechana Levasa Shabbos. So, when we start with the three, I forgot the first important word in that sentence, Gimel. If it's three, Bein Amar Tzrichani, Bein Amar Alo Tzrichani, Mechana Levasa Shabbos. So, whether you're within that three, this is according to Nardai. So, then you're Mechal Shabbos for her because we're still in a state of Psichas HaKever. And so, therefore, regardless of what she says, she's in a state of Sakanas Nefesh, and therefore you're Mechal Shabbos for her. Even if she says she's fine, you're still Mechal Shabbos for her. So that's from postpartum to three. Now, we're going to go from day 4 to day 7. Zion, Amrat Tzrichani Mechal Levasa Shabbos, Amri Lo Tzrichani E Mechal Levasa Shabbos. So then we're going to listen to what she says. If she says that she's in critical condition, so then you're Mechal Shabbos. If she says she's not in critical condition, so then you're not Mechal Shabbos. So that gets us to the end of the first week postpartum. And then from day 7 until day 30 in postpartum, Lamed Afilo Amrat Tzrichani E Mechal Levasa Shabbos. She is not in critical condition. She is not in a state of sakanas nefesh. But rather, if something needs to be done in order to tend to her medical needs, so you do so, you do so through a non-Jew. That if you have a chola, and let's be clear, a chola she'ein bo sakana, somebody who's sick but is not in critical condition. So under those circumstances, what can you do for the care of that sick individual? You can ask a non-Jew to do something for that individual. Amir la'akum. We already discussed Amir la'akum just over a week ago. The Gemara is on Kuf Chaf Aleph and Kuf Chaf Beis. Introduce us to the idea of Amir la'akum. You're not allowed to ask a Jew. Sorry. You're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something that you yourself cannot do on Shabbos. So that's true. However, that's an Issur D'Rabbanan. Right? Rashi said that very clearly back in the Gemara's over there. So over here, for a chola she'ein bo sakana, so the chachamim relaxed the rule of Amir la'akum and you could ask a non-Jew to do something that would result in a violation of a malacha on behalf of a chola she'ein bo sakana. And again, just to reiterate, because this is all very critical, a chola she'esh bo sakana, somebody who's in critical condition, so there a Jew is mechalal Shabbos, and a Jew should run to be mechalal Shabbos in order to save the life of somebody who's in critical condition. And even if a person's in suffik pikuach nefesh, he's possibly in critical condition. We just learned together that you're also mechalal Shabbos. So over here, we're describing somebody who is in, who's ill, who's sick, but is not in critical condition. Under those circumstances, you ask a non-Jew. A woman, the Gemara says, according to the Yeshiva of Narda, from day 7 to the end of the first month postpartum, so at that point in time, she is in the state of being a chola she'ein bo sakana, you ask a non-Jew to do on her behalf. Ukad Rav Hamanuna, Damar Rav Hamanuna, continuing in the Gemara, Dav she'ein bo sakana, if there is no sakana snefesh, Amal anach riva oseh, you ask a non-Jew, he does it for you. I'm Rav Yudah Meshmul, l'chaya lama yom lama hilchasa. So, Rav Yehuda Meshmul says that when it comes to the woman who has just given birth and she is now within the first month postpartum, so what is the halacha? Amri Naradai L'Tzvila. So the halacha is regarding Tzvila. Now, that means to say is as follows. She is in a state of being more delicate. She is only a month postpartum. And so as a result of that, she should not tovel in the mikvah. Toveling in the mikvah, remember, their mikvahs back in the day were not heated. And so therefore, she is at risk of getting a chill while she's already in a weakened state. And so the Gemara says, so that presents to her a significant problem. So in addition to the other halachas that we went to, over the Shabbos halachas that we went to, another halacha within the first 30 days postpartum is that she should not go to the mikvah. Now the Gemara here puts in a caveat. So the Gemara says that's true, but that's only if she's going to the mikvah. Let's say Rashi says for taharos, meaning she wants to make sure that the food she's working with remains in a state of tahara. So there she should not be going to the mikvah within 30 days. I.e. she wants the food to remain in a state of tahara, so get somebody else to do it. In other words, she's not going to be able to go to the mikvah. However, says the Gemara, the caveat is that if she's going to the mikvah to be with her husband, so there is no concern, because the concern of the mikvah is that she's going to get a chill, but if she's going to go home with her husband's going to warm her up. Ki had debarti derav chista tavla begotal sin yomin, shelo bifnei bala. So the Gemara says that this in fact happened with the daughter of Chista, where she went to the mikvah within 30 days. Her husband was not there, v'itztanes, and she got this chill, v'imtu la'arsa basrei, derav l'pumpadisa. And then they picked up her bed and they transported the bed all the way to her husband, Rava. Rava married the daughter of Chista. The Gemara tells us this on numerous occasions. And so the Gemara just simply says that she went to the mikvah. She was ill-advised. I mean, the Gemara doesn't explain why she did so. But anyway, she did so, and she got the chill, and so they quickly rushed her over to Rava so that he could warm her up. I'm Rav Yehuda Meshmul Osin Madur L'Chai B'Shabbos. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that one is allowed to make a bonfire for the midwife on Shabbos, not the midwife, sorry, for the woman who is given birth. The Gemara at this point in time thinks that this is a dispensation that was given by Shmuel specifically for the woman who's given birth. The Gemara says, but he wasn't talking about a regular chola. And and the Gemara also thinks that this dispensation was given out only during the cold winter months, but not during the warm summer months, because there's no need to. She's not in a precarious state. And the Gemara says, now we have a lot of this in parentheses. It's a question of what the girsa is, but the point is all going to come out to be the same. And I'll read the parentheses. Velohi loshna chaya, loshna chola, loshna biyamosak shamim, loshna biyamosak chama. The Gemara says it really doesn't matter. Meaning that if the woman has given birth and she is in a precarious state, you light a fire for her, you are going to be mechal Shabbos. Again, we're talking about a sakanas nefesh, and there is no minimization of the heter. The heter is that if she has a chill, you light a fire for her. I'm Rav Chia Bar Avin, I'm Rav Shmuel, Hikis Dam Benitztanein, Osin Lo Medura Afilo Betzkufas Tamos. And the Gemara says, another halach in Shmuel, and that is that after bloodletting, and the person has a chill after bloodletting, so again, that person now is in a delicate state, so you make a fire, and even if it's in the summer months, but that person now is in a state of fragility, and so therefore you do so even if it's in the summer months. Shmuel Sachule Takata Deshaga. The Gemara now goes over the practices of various Amorayim in terms of what they would do in order to make a fire. So Shmuel would take a chair, break the chair, it was an expensive piece of furniture. and he would break the chair in order to make the fire. Rav Yehuda Tzachulei Pitur de Yona. And Rav Yehuda would take a table, it was made out of cedar wood, and he would break it. Rabba Tzachulei Sharshifa. Rabba, they would break a bench in order to make a fire out of the wood of the bench. And so Abai says to Rabba, you know, I understand your bloodlet, I understand that you're suffering from a chill, but you're breaking all this wonderful furniture. Isn't that a violation of Baltashkis? So Amar Lei called Tashkis to Gufai. Adifli. So Rabba's response to Abai was, yeah, there's also called Baltashkis on my body, meaning my body is going to be more important than my furniture. It's a little bit challenging to understand exactly what Abai was even asking, meaning Baltashkis is a consideration, but the care of one's person, of one's body, is obviously of more significance. So it is difficult to understand the back and forth. Rava's answer seems to be really obvious. But anyway, but the point is that, yeah, there's something called Baltashkis in my body, and that obviously has much more importance than any of the furniture in my house. If I have to break the furniture in order to make firewood, in order for me to warm up, that is more significant, obviously. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav La'olamin, Kor Adam Kor's Beiso, V'kach Menalim L'Raglav. Just the importance of making sure that one maintains warmth. A person should be selling literally the walls of one's house in order to buy shoes. Now, we discussed the importance of shoes. On the other hand, after you bloodlet and you have nothing to eat, you sell your shoes. And you should eat. My tarchisuda, the Gemara says, now what should you be eating? Rav Amar Basar, Shmuel Amar Yayin. So Rav and Shmuel are both going to give their opinions of what they should eat, meat and wine, Rav Shmuel respectively, Rav Amar Basar, Nafsha, Chalaf, Nafsha, I'm sorry, Basar, Nafsha, Chalaf, Nafsha. So Rav is of the opinion that one should eat meat because you lost meat, I mean you lost blood, but the replacement, he feels that the best replacement over value for the loss of blood is going to be meat. Shmuel Amar Yayin, Simka, Chalaf, Simka. Shmuel focuses on the fact that what you lost is red, what you're going to regain is red, and Shmuel's looking at the colorations over here, and he feels that the best replacement over the value of the blood that you lost is going to be wine. Okay, the Gemara will spend, admittedly, now for the remainder of today's daf, what would seem to us to be an inordinate amount of time and precious real estate of the Gemara discussing the halachas of bloodletting. Now you see how we transition from one to the other. Meaning bloodletting was a practice that was done back in the day. It was obviously very popular. We're going to be speaking about it today in details in which I would say we shouldn't care, but we do care because it's part and parcel of Torah. It's part of today's daf. But nevertheless, it's not practiced nowadays. So obviously from us, we're going to be treating it from a much more academic standpoint than we are going to be a practical standpoint because it's just simply not part of our lives. Back in the day, it was a therapy. It was a regular therapy. It was done on a monthly basis. We're going to see all this coming up in the Gemaras. It was done on a monthly basis. Is that as you get older, so you would scale back on how on the level of frequency. It was done basically to, quote unquote, lighten you, to balance you. Okay, it was extraordinarily popular. And at the same time, however, as much as it was a therapy, at the same time, however, it put a person in a precarious state. So it was I'll call it a risky therapy. It was not risky. Everyone did it. In fact, the Gemara later on is going to tell us that Shomer Pesai Mashem, meaning, yes, there was a risk involved, but it's a totally acceptable risk in terms of doing it. But at the same time, however, there's an acknowledgement that there's a risk. And so therefore, with those risk factors, so you have to practice bloodletting cautiously. You have to make sure that when you do so, you're responsible about what you do beforehand, afterwards, your eating schedule, the days of the week in which you should be doing it, the days of the week you shouldn't be doing it, and the Gemara is going to go through all the details. And if we can walk away with anything from these Gemaras over here, meaning aside from the just basic pshat of the Gemara, is that when we engage in any kind of risky behavior, which is an allowable risk, at the same time, however, we have to be cautious and we have to be responsible. And the Gemara over here, in other words, the lessons of the Gemara certainly are ones that we could take home with today, even though the actual Gemaras themselves are gonna sound to us to be a little bit foreign. Okay, Adkan Divrei introduction. Let us now continue in the Gemara as the Gemara goes over many details regarding Hakazas Adam. Number one, what should one's meal be after you do Hakazas Adam? Shmuel b'yom David milsa abdile tashila de tachle. So, by the way, I'm not sure. Right now, I'm just second guessing whether or not the meal here is before or after the Hakasas Adam, regardless. On the day in which you bloodlet. So the Gemara is going to go over five different Amoraim and the practices of what they ate. Shmuel b'yom adav and milsa abdilei tafshila tzachli, he would eat the spleen of an animal. The spleen was very red in nature, and that made up for the lost blood. Rav Yochanan shasi adanafek tiyah mi'uneh. Rav Yochanan drank a ton of wine on the day in which he bloodlet. Basically, you smelled the wine coming out of his ears. Rav Nachman shasi ad dekafitachle. Rav Nachman would be drinking wine up until the point where his spleen was basically drowning in the wine. Yes, the Gemara here could be speaking, but derech guzma is an exaggeration. He drank a lot of wine. Rav Yosef shasef ad denafek mirivda dekulsisa. Rav Yosef would be drinking wine all the way to the point where the wine would be coming out of the areas where his skin got poked in terms of where the bloodletting was, and the wine would be coming out of those holes. Right? Guzma, exaggeration. Rava Mahadar Chamra Beitasa Tarfe. Rava would be looking for wine that was 3 leaves old. Rashi describes this as perhaps being 3 years old. Anyway, certain type of wine that he was looking for. Amlu Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak L'Rabbanim Mematus Minachem Yom Da'akaza Amr L'Vaseichu. So Rav Nachman says to his students, look, on the day in which you're going to be bloodletting, so here's what you're going to say to your wives on that day. Nachman ikla lagavan. You know, Rav Nachman's coming over. So make sure that the meal that we have is a really important meal because Rav Nachman's coming over. Now, I would venture a guess that these wives over here were very smart. And I'm venturing a guess that these wives knew that this isn't exactly the case. In other words, it was just basically a respectful, right, cute way of basically saying, make sure that we have a good meal today because I'm going to go bloodletting. V'kula harama asura bar mehai harama deshari. The Gemara says now harama, saying anything which is disingenuous is in general something which is prohibited. But over here, we're talking about a kasa sadam. We're talking about where you're putting yourself in a state of fragility, and so therefore you can make statements like this, right? Make sure to have a big meal. I'm bringing guests over tonight, even though you're really not bringing guests over tonight. Mandav and milsa below ashtalei. So let's say that you are bloodletting, right? The Gemara over here now just describes this manda avid milsa. He's doing the thing, right? At this point in time now, the Gemara knows that we're talking about bloodletting, and so the Gemara doesn't even describe it, you know, with using proper nouns. So and he simply can't get his hands on a good meal. So what should he do? Lishkol zuzamaka. So he should take a bad coin, velezel l'shav chanusa ad the time shir riviyasa. And he should go from store to store, trying out, sampling different foods, and then when actually coming to pay for it, so he shows the bad coin. The store owner is going to look at the bad coin, basically say, no, I'm not selling it to you for that bad coin. And so, but at least what he was able to do was sample. Now, again, this is behavior which is not generally condoned, but for the purposes of helping him recover from his bloodletting, so the Gemara is giving certain allowances. So the Elo, now if this isn't even an option, Lechol, Shiv Tamayuch Masa, so then eat 7 dates that are black, Valesha of Mishcha B'tzidah, V'nigne B'shimsha, and then rub the oil on the sides of your head, and you should sleep in the sun. Avle Yeshkechu Echei L'Shmuel, Degana B'shimsha, Avleit, a personality that was living at the time of the Gemara, so he saw Shmuel that he was lying in the sun. Amrle, Chachim D'Yudai, Bisha Mehava Tava. So the Avleit didn't understand. Shmuel was recognized as not only being a Talmid Chacham, but also a physician. He had expertise in many different disciplines, and he just didn't understand. What are you doing sleeping out in the sun? How could that possibly be good? Amrle, Yumada Kazahu Yumada Kazahi. So so his response is, oh, I bloodlet. Now, and the Gemara acknowledges, by the way, that wasn't even the right answer, meaning that wasn't even the reality, but it was an understood answer. Then after bloodletting, so you go out to the sun. So that was an answer that satisfied of late. But the Gemara says, Velohi ela ika yuma damale ba shimsha bakuli shasa yuma danafla ba beitkufas tamuz visavrlo igla le. On the other hand, however, there happens to be one day in particular where going out to the sun is efficacious, and he went out on that one day, and he didn't want to divulge that information over to Ivlat. Okay, who this Ivlat was and why Shmuel had this kind of standoffish relationship with him. So the Gemara over here doesn't clarify, but anyway, there was that one special day. By the way, what is that one special day? So I can only guess, because it says, Yuma de Nafla Beit Kufas Tamas. in the day in which the summer begins. It sounds like the Gemara here is describing the solstice. On the other hand, on the side of the Gemara, it also says Teves. So it could be the summer solstice, it could be the winter solstice. Anyway, not clear exactly what that one day is, but there's one day in which the sun happens to be super efficacious, says Shmuel. Anyway, back to the Gemara. Rabbi Shmuel Dami Tavai Kol HaMekel Besuda Sakaz Asdam Mekil En Lo Mezonasav Min HaShamayim. So somebody who is not careful about eating on the day in which he has a kasas adam, so Kosh Baruch Hu says, okay, he's not worried, I'm not worried. Omrim hu achayev lo chas anichos alav, that person doesn't have rachmanas on himself, I'm not going to have much rachmanas on that individual as well. Clearly, a person needs to take responsibility for their own health. Kosh Baruch Hu assists such an individual, the person is not careful, he's not responsible. Kosh Baruch Hu basically mirrors that attitude. A person who has given blood, so he should not be sitting in a place where the wind is blowing. Because what happens is that the blood letter may have taken out too much blood, and you're basically down to your last revius of blood. Now, by the way, just in general, Rashi mentions this a number of times throughout Shas, is that the halacha of Tumas Meis is that if you have a kazais of the flesh, or if you have the revius of blood, a revius of blood of human remains is going to be metame. And Rashi says the reason why is because a person can subsist and survive based on a revius of blood. Now, we've gone over this halacha before, and I've consulted with a cardiologist, and it's difficult to explain that from our knowledge of medicine, but anyway, that is Rashi in a number of places throughout Shas. So what's going to happen is that the blood letter may take out too much blood. You're down to your last revius. And the wind is basically going to push you over. So you're basically on the brink of death, and then you get a strong wind and you get pushed over. Shmuel made sure that on the day that he bloodlet, so he was in a totally insulated house, protected by walls all around. Now, one time, after bloodletting, so then he went into his insulated house, but he felt the wind, he felt the breeze. And lo and behold, is that normally the house was insulated by seven layers of brick. Right, the Shev Levina Va'aricha. I didn't emphasize that strongly enough. And over here, he felt that he actually checked afterwards, and there was one layer that was missing. Right, so I'm not sure who took away that one layer of brick, but anyway, he felt it. Rabbi Shmuel Dami Tavai Haiman Davin Milsa Litomidi Vahadar Lepuk. A person who is bloodless, first you should eat, and then afterwards you should go out. Di Lotamidi Ipag Bishichva Yaraka Yarka Ape. So the Gemara says, because if you do not do that, so then what happens is that if you go out and you expose yourself, so if let's say you come across somebody who's dead, so then you yourself are going to you're going to lose coloration. And ipagam aman dekalta nafshe, miss. Now if you happen to go outside and just simply meet a killer immediately after bloodletting, again you're in that very frail state. So then you yourself are going to die. And he pug of a davar achir. Now, if you happen to confront a pig, right, the Gemara's terminology for a pig as we turn to the top of the next amud, so kashal davar achir, that is going to be bad for davar achir, meaning that you are going to be susceptible to receiving saras. Rabbi Shmuel Dami Tavai Haiman David Milsa, Lishi Porta Bahadar Lekum. After bloodletting, do not get up right away, but rather lie down over there for a little bit. Damar Hey Devarim Korban Lemisa Yoser Menachayim Be'elohein. Five things are more proximate to death, and they are achal va'amah, the person who eats and gets up right away, not good. Shasa va'amah, same thing with drinking and getting up right away. Yashan va'amah, somebody sleeping and gets up right away. Get up, but don't jump out of bed. Even though the beginning of Shulchan Aruch talks about his gaber ka'ari, that you should get up like a lion, so that's true, but at the same time, however, don't wake up and immediately jump out of bed. Wake up, get up. But in terms of getting out of bed, wait a moment, pause. And number four, hikiz dam va'amad, someone who bloodlets and gets up right away, and then shimish mitasa va'amad. A man having relations with his wife should not be getting up right away. So all these are detrimental. A person, after all five of these activities, should pause and wait a little bit and then get up. Amr Shmuel Pursa Dadama Kol Tasin Yama. So in terms of the schedule of bloodletting, so Shmuel says, is that while you're young, so then kol tzas yamim, you should do so every 30 days. On a monthly basis, one should be bloodletting. Bein aprakim, however, after a certain age, Rashi over here is not shy. Rashi tells us that after 40, so yimat, so then the schedule should go down a little bit. Rashi says every other month. Bein aprakim, now after another certain age, Rashi again is not shy, after 60 years of age, yachzer v'yimat, so then it should be every third month. The Amr Shmuel Pursa Dadama Chad B'Shabasa Arba Umale Shabasa. Okay, when during the week should one be doing the bloodletting? So Sunday is a good day, Wednesday is a good day, Friday is a good day, but not Monday and Thursday. Avach Shein V'Chamishi Lo. Damar Mishi Yishlo Zechus Avos Yakizam Shein V'Chamishi Shebezin Shomala V'Shomata Shavin Ke'echa. So we know that on Monday and Thursday are Yemei HaDin. There is judgment. There's judgment both in this world and there's judgment in the world above. Ezra, when he instituted the court system, so he instituted that the court set up on Monday and Thursday. There you have the Beis in Shomala, and then parallel that, you have the Beis in Shomata down here, long Tachanun for Monday and Thursday, because there you made din. And so therefore, somebody who has chusavo, so then bloodletting on Monday and Thursday is wonderful. But for the rest of us, which the Gemara assumes is that is describing the vast majority of us, but for the rest of us, however, do not do a Kazas Adam on Monday and Thursday. They are not days of Rachamim, and so therefore it is not good to do so. If you've been keeping score now, so Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday are all good days that check out for Akasas Adam. Monday and Thursday, you should not be doing Akasas Adam. What are we missing over here? So we are missing Tuesday. And the Gemara wants to know, what happened to Tuesday? So, no, Shabbos obviously is out of the question, but what happened to Tuesday? So, B'tos B'Shabbos, my time alone. So the Gemara is assuming that Tuesday is not a good day. So, Mishum Dekaimele Ma'adim B'Zuzay. So the Gemara says, well, the reason why is because you have the influence of Mars coming out during an even hour. Okay. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this. It is, for some of us, really interesting. For others, not. But nevertheless, I'll give you the basics, and you can take it from there. Rashi over here, by the way, does spend a good amount of time going over this, but I will give the very basics. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created and went through Briyas HaOlam, so sun, moon, and the stars and the planets were all installed on Yom Revi'i, on Wednesday. So that means already on Tuesday night, so they were all set in motion. Now, in terms of the planets that can be seen by the naked eye, so there are a total of seven. There is the sun, there are moon, and there are five planets that can be seen by the naked eye. In fact, for those of you who are interested, I don't know if there's a lot of you, Venus happens to be very close to the Earth right now. Anyway, five planets can be seen by the naked eye. That makes for a total of seven planets, in addition to, obviously, all the stars, which make up the constellation. They're fixed in the sky, but the planets are in constant motion. And so they could be seen. On top of that, there is a Masorah that we have, that they have influence on this world. And the way they influence this in the world is in a particular order. You could see Rashi for that particular order in which they have influences on this world. And it is irrespective of when they are seen in the sky, their influences are on an hourly schedule, where you go 1 hour to the next hour, and each one of them 7 hours in a row on a fixed schedule where they're going to have influences, various influences. The Gemara later on in Masechta Shabbos is going to be talking more about the influence of Mars. Anyway, on top of all that, because they are working now in an hourly influence and because they are operating 7 hours, so if you do that over the course of the week, what you're going to find is that the cycle repeats itself on a weekly basis. So you do the math and you'll figure out that 7 hours repeated over a weekly basis gets you to the same exact point. So now, on a weekly schedule, these influences occur on a regular time. On top of that, if you look now at a weekly calendar with these influences, and I'm sure the art school does a wonderful job giving you this calendar. So what you will find is the following, is that on Tuesday and on Friday, so the Mars influence will occur during an even hour. Now, for those of you who remember Gemar Pesachim, and it's probably closer on the front end than it was on the back end, a lot closer. But you remember the Gemara Pesachim, the Gemara talks about how zugos, how pairs, how even is something that is not a positive, does not have positive effects. And so on 2 days of the week, the constellation, the influence of Mars not the constellation. The influence of Mars is going to appear on an even hour. That's going to be on a Tuesday and it's going to be on a Friday. You could look at the schedule, you'll see. Rashi over here reports it. Okay. With that stated, so now what you have is on Tuesday and on Friday. Now we're going to get back to Friday in just a moment. On Tuesday, you have now a confluence of two bad things. One, the influence of Mars. And if you could take a look at that at the beginning of the Rashi. Rashi says Mars is a very bad influence. Rashi says, Umazo madim mumuna al, cherev, valdever, valpuranios. So the influence of Mars is for sword, meaning war, pestilence, puranios, and zugos, kashin shein rishos l'shedim. And Rashi says that the influence of pair being in an even number, so that's going to be bad because that is exposure, a lot of exposure to shedim. Again, all this I could say, obviously, I'm limited in my understanding, obviously. But anyway, so when you have this confluence of events, that's really not good. So Tuesday you have it. On Tuesday comes out that the eighth hour of the day, oh, and by the way, Rashi also points out over here, I'll just say it outside, that you will find that Mars will have influences at certain nights during the week, which are during even hours, but Rashi says, but the nights don't count. Again, for reasons which I cannot articulate why, but it doesn't matter. Nights don't count. So you only have to worry about it during the day. So during the day, so the only time that you have these issues is going to be on Tuesday, where it comes out in the eighth hour, and also comes out on Friday, and Friday comes out in the sixth hour. Okay, good. So for this reason, now Tuesday, scratch Tuesday for Akazas Adam. It's not a good day, because you have the confluence of these two bad events, Madim and Zugos. So the Gemara says, okay, now we go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Erev Shabbos Friday, so we also have the confluence of the influence of Mars and the Zugos, as we pointed out, comes out on the sixth hour. So the Gemara says, Kevin Dedashu Beirav and Shomer Pesayim Hashem. The Gemara says, yeah, but Friday, everyone does a Kasas Adam on Friday. And I would venture a guess, right, I imagine that Friday is an opportune time to do so because you're going into Shabbos and you're going to have plenty of rest opportunity afterwards. Fine. So anyway, so everyone did it on Friday, Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Meaning you're right that if we were to look at the influences, we wouldn't do it, but enough people do it, it's fine. Tuesday, however, the Gemara says, no, you don't do it on Tuesday. Amr Shmuel Dalad Duhu Dalad. Wednesday, which falls on the 4th of the month. Dalu Arbase, or Wednesday that falls on the 14th of the month. Or Dalad Duhu Asrim Barba, Wednesday that falls out on the 24th of the month. Dalad Daleka Arba Basrei. Or let's say you have a Wednesday where there are not four more days in the month. Sakanta, all this serves as a sakana. Continuing, Rabbi Rosh Chodesh Vesheni Lo Chulsha. On Rosh Chodesh, and on the second day, it's not good. Shlishi Lo Sakana. On the third day of the month, it's also not good. Mala Yumatava Chulsha. On Erev Yontov, it's not good. Mala Yumada Atsata Sakanta. On Erev Shavuos, it's not good, because Rabbanan Kula Mala Yumatava, Mishum Yumatava Da'atzeres. The truth of the matter is that the only Erev Yontov that's really not good is only on Erev Shavuos. But the Chachamim said, okay, just to get us in the habit of not doing a Kasas Adam on any Erev Yontov, so they made a Gzera not to do it on any Erev Yontov, although really the truth of the matter is it's Erev Shavuos that is the most... the most dangerous time to do so. Why? Denafik Bezika, Vishmei Tavuach, because a wind comes out. The name of the wind is Tavuach, Ilo Kabli Yisrael Torah, Havatavach Lu Lebisrayu, Ula Demayu. If the Jewish people would not have accepted the Torah, so then this would have destroyed the whole world. We have gotten now here in Masechta Shabbos, on two occasions, the cataclysmic events that would have befallen the Jewish people and now the world had we not accepted the Torah. We see this over here. We saw back on Peches, continuing in the Gemara. Amr Shmuel achol chita v'hikizdam lo hikizdam lo oso chita. Shmuel says, look, you eat wheat before Akasas Adam, so it didn't do anything for you. The only thing now, the removal of the blood did, is it balanced you against the wheat, which presumably, I'm guessing from the tone of the Gemara, it's just not good. V'hani mil refuah v'ala akule meko. Now, that's only in terms of healing, but if all you want to do is just simply lighten yourself up, so then, yes, so then bloodletting would be a great way to lighten you, even though you have eaten wheat. The Gemara now gives instructions of how to eat, when to eat after you did the Hakazas Adam. Drinking should be done immediately afterwards, eating a half an hour later. And even on this, the Gemara has follow-up questions. Does that mean to say that drinking immediately afterwards is effective, but if I wait a little bit, that's not only not effective, but it's detrimental? Or maybe no. Maybe the effective drink is to be done immediately, but if I wait a little bit, doesn't help you, doesn't hurt you. Take the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Dibailahu, achilas chatzimil hu de kamale, habasar hachi umekame hachi kashi. When we say eating half an hour after bloodletting, does that mean that specifically you have to be eating a half an hour after bloodletting, not before and not after? Odil malo kashi velo male, or maybe no. Maybe eating before afterwards is not going to be detrimental, it's just simply not going to help you. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Machris rav, mea kari bezuze. If, let's say, in the market they're selling 100 pumpkins for a zuz, that's a deal. Go get it. And mea reisha bezuze. Let's say they're selling the heads of animal. 100 of them for a zuz, again, a deal. Mea safami velo klum. The Gemara says lips of an animal. So that is, it's pointless. It's useless. Amre Rav Yosef ki avina bei Rav Huna yuma de mefagre bei Rabbanan. Amre, now Rav Huna said on the day in which the Chachamim were lazy, so he would have an expression for that day. So he would say Amre ha'ina yuma de safamehu. It's the day of lips. And v'lo yadana ma'akami. Now he didn't understand, but now in the context I understand. Meaning that lips have no value, and when the Chachamim have a particularly bad day in the Beis Medrash, so he called that the day of lips, right? Lip service, if you will. The kosher and a tibor, now we're back to the halachas regarding delivering of the baby, and the question of what to do with the umbilical cord. Tan Rabban, a kosher and a tibor. So like we saw back in the Mishnah, here we have a braisa paralleling the Mishnah. And that is, the Tanakhama says that you can tie the umbilical cord. Rabbi Yossi Omer, avchotchin, v'tomnen ashali kadesh yechem avlad. So Rav Yossi says that you can cut the umbilical cord, and on top of that, you can also insulate the placenta afterwards. There was a practice, and I'm not here to explain it, just simply say it over, in which you would wrap up the placenta, and somehow, in some manner, that would warm up the fetus, the newborn. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Benos Malachim, Tomnos Besfalim, Shoshemen. Now, in terms of the insulation of the placenta, so some would do so in the rich. I'm sorry. The royalty would do so in bowls of oil. Benos Hashirim b'sefugim shel semar. Wealthy women would be insulating it in wool. And benos aniyim b'muchin. And poor women would do so in tufts of cotton. I'm Rav Nachman. I'm a Rav Baravu. I'm a Rav Alachik. Rav Yossi. The Gemara over here sides with the position of Rav Yossi that one can be cutting the umbilical cord, not just tying it up. V'am Rav Nachman, Am Rav Baravu, Am Rav Modim Chacham L'Rav Yosef B'Tibur Shal Shnei Tinokos Shechotchem. Now let's say it is a twin birth. So under those circumstances, even the Chachamim say you should cut the umbilical cord. My time of Deminaske Adade, because assuming that these two umbilical cords are connected to one placenta, so then what's going to happen is that they're going to be pulling on one another, and that serves as a threat to the babies. And so there, even the Chachamim would say there you cut the umbilical cord. The halach is that we cut the umbilical cord, even if it's one. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Amar Rav Kol Omer, Beparshas, Tochecha Osem L'Chai B'Shabbos. Now, a great way to look at what could be done for a woman giving birth on Shabbos is to open up Sefer Yecheskel. Sefer Yecheskel, so the Navi is saying in a way of description that we are not going to be cared for, so we're not going to get the normal care that a woman who's given birth is going to be given. That is the Navi giving Tochacha to the people. So now what we gain from this pasuk, we're going to go through the pasuk and we're going to darshan, and we're going to see that this is the general care that should be done for somebody who is giving birth. So here, the Navi went through a number of things that are not going to occur, and now the Gemara is going to contrast. So this is what should normally be done. And we're going to break up the pasuk phrase by phrase. So on the day that you give birth, regardless of what that day is, so you miyale, meaning you assist and you help in terms of giving birth. So it wasn't cut, which means to say that normally you're supposed to cut the umbilical cord, even if it's Shabbos. You bathe the baby on Shabbos. And on top of that, you also salt the baby on Shabbos. So somehow it strengthens the body. And on top of that, you also swaddle the baby on Shabbos. Rashi reminds us of what we learned just a parak earlier in terms of the manipulation of the baby. The Gemara had a discussion in terms of whether or not that can be done on Shabbos. It cannot be done on Shabbos. But over here, our Gemara certainly is of the position that one is allowed to do so. Hadron alach mefanim, that is the end of the 18th parak of Shabbos. And we are, tomorrow morning, in Mitzvah Hashem, going to be beginning 19th parak, Rebbe Lazar Demila. Let's quickly recap our morning. We started off our morning talking about how one is Mechal Shabbos for a woman giving birth, and that includes basically not only her physical needs, but even her emotional needs as well. Even if she's blind, you light a fire for her. You try to minimize the amount of malacha that you do for her. And so the oil, if you can carry it in an unusual manner to get the oil over and not have to violate the malacha of Atzama Daraisa, that is preferable, including even putting the oil in your hair, which engendered the Gemara's discussion of oil in the hair. Isn't that a violation of Schita? Two opinions amongst the Amoraim and whether or not squeezing oil out of the hair would be a violation of Schita. The Gemara goes on to discuss in greater detail regarding a woman postpartum. So while she is delivering, she's in a state of sakanas nefesh, you for sure violate Shabbos regardless of what she says. What about after the stimas hakever? What about immediately postpartum? So there are two opinions in the Gemara. The Gemara says that we're going to err on the side of caution, and that means to say that we're mechal Shabbos, even though it's postpartum, even though she is not apparently in total in risk of her life. But if she says that she's in risk, so you're Mechal Shabbos on her behalf. The Gemara's conclusion very clearly is that we are Suffolk Nefashos, we are Mekel. That in order to preserve life, we're going to be Mekel regarding Shabbos, or the other way we said it, you're going to be Machmir in terms of Pikuach Nefesh. Either way, the Gemara is very clear. From what point in time is the Psichas a Kever and when is the closing of the Kever? So the Gemara gave three different ways to diagnose when you have the Psichas a Kever. And it goes till when? So we had opinions in the Gemara, either 3, 7, or 30 days postpartum. The Gemara, according to the Yeshiva of Narada, went through these various periods of time postpartum, 3 days after, 7 days after, 30 days after, spoke about various halachas as it relates to Shabbos. On top of that, the Gemara says that within 30 days postpartum, she should not be going to the mikvah unless she's going to be with her husband because of her precarious state and because of the chill. The Gemara says the same thing is true regarding Hakasas Adam. One should not be going to the mikvah after Hakasas Adam because of the chill. And then that led to a really long discussion in today's daf regarding the halachas of Hakasas Adam. Just a very, very short overview of what we discussed. Discussed the importance of making sure that you are heated up afterwards. We talked about the meals that you're going to be eating. Even a little bit of harama on the day when you come home from Hakasas Adam, telling your wife that there are guests that are coming, the Gemara condones that. The Gemara talks about what to eat. The Gemara talks about not standing up after Hakasa. The Gemara actually today gave us 5 activities where you should not be standing up right away. As we are now on the top of the Amud Beis in our review, we talked about how often a person should go for Hakasas Adam, once a month, after 40, once every other month, after 60, once every third month. What days of the week are good for Hakasas Adam? So we discussed Monday and Thursday are out of the question. There you may din. Tuesday is not good because of the confluence of two influences, Ma'adin and Zugos. Friday you also have that, but the Gemara says, but Shomer Pesayim Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks over us. We talked about certain days of the month that are not good for Hakasas Adam. And certain Erev Yontivs, actually every Erev Yontiv is not going to be good for Hakasas Adam. We discussed that very briefly. The amount of time that one should be eating and or drinking after Hakasas Adam, the Gemara went over that. And then finally, we went back to the halachas of delivering, talked about the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yossi in terms of whether one should be cutting the umbilical cord. The halacha is that one should be cutting the umbilical cord, and other activities that are done for both the mother and for the baby postpartum The Gemara wrapped up the perek on those points.